Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio WNML to keep up with breaking sports news. Now, back to Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hour number two of Sports Talk begins on Tuesdays. That means it's Vince Ferrara time as he joins us for the hour. His appearance brought to you by our good friends at Waters Equipment. Vince, how are you?
I'm great, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Doing quite well. Now, for some, the ball got rolling early, but it's Tennessee's first foray into conference play, a trip to Gainesville after Florida came oh so close to shocking the world with the way it rallied and almost took down Alabama. Your initial thoughts on what Tennessee faces as it dives into Eastern Division play?
Well, to me, coming out of that game, I'm more impacted in looking at Florida being a more difficult team versus Alabama being this lesser version of itself. I know that's the easy thing to want and to look for and and all that with Alabama. Yes, there's areas that you point to like, I don't know. But how many we've been there, done that with Alabama at some point. It's not like they win every game in the history of football while Nick Saban is there. There have been times where either they've given up a ton of points and still won a ball game, Ole Miss last year, or they'll lose a regular season game. But they're a team that seems to figure things out as the year goes on. And so I'm not changing my opinion on Alabama still being the best team in the country right now. Where I did change is being impressed with Florida. I didn't think that they would do that well at the line of scrimmage against Alabama. Running the football, we've talked about the quarterbacks, two very good quarterbacks in terms of running the football, but then you saw a stable of running backs that can get the job done there as well. And to rush for 6 yards a carry against Alabama just doesn't happen very much. So there's a lot of other positives there, the fight they had, and then the defensive adjustments as the game goes on, making Emory Jones a better quarterback than I anticipated he would be. So I think there was a lot of things you can point to in terms of Florida and them being an even tougher opponent for, obviously, Tennessee coming up this Saturday and for other teams moving forward, although I wouldn't put them in the Georgia category just yet.
Why don't we get a call from John, who joins us. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, John.
Hold on.
Doing well. How are you?
Howdy. I was just watching Paul Feinbaum. I want to talk to Jimmy.
Sure.
Jimmy, yes. I got to ask you.
Okay.
Because I ain't seen defense that good from Tennessee in about 20 years. We got the defense. We have the defense. Listen, I love them kids. Boy, they will take your head off. But I got to ask you, what's going on with that offense? I don't think Tennessee's offense can run with Florida. I think we're a little bit weak there. What do you think?
John, I think the offense has to get more on the same page. They've got to hit some of those deep balls. We heard Cody Burns, the receivers coach, talk about how they were going back and forth at quarterback.
Yeah, we got injuries.
Okay.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
All right.
And Jimmy, so, you're amazing, okay? I've only met like one person smarter than you.
Oh, I've met more than that. But anyway, in terms of the offense, John, I think they got to get on the same page. Cody Burns talked about how they are still building some chemistry, and a lot of the routes they run, they're read routes because they're running run-pass options. And because of that, they're still trying to get the quarterback and the receivers on the right page on whether the receiver's going to run an out route, a slant, a curl, a deep route, whatever it is. And so I think there's still some feeling out to be done. Now, I am concerned that the run game was not better against Tennessee Tech. You should have been able to run for a whole lot more than Tennessee did in that game. And I think the offensive line has concerns. And defensively, while I've been impressed with what they have done so far, and I've been impressed with the run defense, This is the litmus test. You've played two bad opponents, and you played a team that I probably overrated in Pitt, but now is when you find out whether that defense is for real when you go against Florida. All right. Thanks, John.
I want to know who this person is that's smarter than Jimmy Himes. I mean, we need to investigate that.
My wife.
There you go.
Brownie points.
But your thoughts, Vince?
Well, I think, yeah, Jimmy brings up some great points. The one thing we have to keep in mind, and it's very hard in our situation because you want to try to take something out of these games. Vanderbilt played a lot better against Stanford than they did against ETSU. He scored like 20 more points than they did. So not everything is absolute from one week to the other. A team can play really well against a great team and then have a severe drop-off. Tennessee fans hoping for that this Saturday in Gainesville, that there is some sort of letdown there. Each week, it's its own ride, and you can't just take one and think that that's the finished product. These are kids we're talking about / young adults in some situations. So there are some things. I think one little positive from the Tennessee Tech game is that Tennessee got a chance to play a lot of players. Obviously, a lot of players that were missing. Some players held out. Others, like Byron Young, was back. But others that they probably kept out just that could have gone out of precaution until they need them for this SEC game. So they didn't accumulate. And then others, because of the score, they got a chance to play a lot of other young guys for extended period of time in the second half, and for others rotating in fairly early. So I think that's good that they didn't add on unnecessary snaps on their starters when this team is not very deep. So I do think that was a positive for them. We'll see with Tennessee not being super deep, if they get most of their guys back, we'll see if maybe we see some better results from that alone, because we haven't really seen a 100% Tennessee yet. There's been a handful of guys out for each game, and this team isn't deep enough to be able to overcome that. And we'll see if that playing time pays off for them if they get all those guys back this week.
If you have a question or comment for Vince, 656-9900, 656-9900, *990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
Vince, what do you think about Tennessee's run defense? We asked Rodney Garner today, and he said, God, we've had a lot of mistakes. If you look at the film, we've had tackles for losses that we should have had more, sacks. How do you gauge at this point Tennessee's run defense?
I think they've done a good job, but I still think the level of competition jumps up so tremendously. You know, Pitt on paper had running back at the end of last year that went off for like almost 200 yards against Georgia Tech, and some other guys are excited about. I mean, I watched their game the week before, and it seemed like they had a really nice stable of backs and an experienced offensive line in front of them, but they really weren't able to. They didn't look explosive. They looked a step slow. I thought that was an adjustment for Pitt versus Tennessee's speed and athleticism early, and then they ultimately adjusted. So I don't think Pitt is a great running team. And then obviously the two other opponents just don't offer you any sort of resistance. That's why you could look at it the other way in terms of lack of productivity for Tennessee's rush offense. But in terms of the rush defense, I still think they're playing the right way. That aggressiveness, I think, helps them with that tackles for loss. They're aggressive. They play vertical, is something that the coaches and the players have talked a lot about. And that helped. I do think that helps them shoot those gaps and be able to get in the backfield versus playing more in a conservative type of fill the gap towards type of way like they did before and go have guys behind you make plays. They're looking to make plays on all three levels. And I do like that aggressiveness about Tim Banks's defense. And so I think they've been able to make some plays there. But how do you put that all together against Florida is a completely different conversation, because not only do they threaten you inside the tackles, they threaten you on the perimeter as well. And Tennessee has not really seen that to this point. So this will truly be the test. But I like the way they've played to this point, just not a finished product yet.
So we heard today that if a big man runs out of fuel, there's no refueling him. When the gas tank is empty, you can't refuel him. So here's my question about that. Is Rodney Garner playing a lot of people in this rotation to keep them fresh, or does he truly have 8, 9, 10 people that he feels good about on that defensive line?
I think it's both, Jimmy. And they don't have a superstar, but they have a lot of guys that are effort guys and guys that are coachable and guys that are playing pretty well. So I think there's some similarity with 2 years ago, Jimmy, because that's kind of what you could say some of those things about 2 years ago. And we've talked about the comparisons of Tracy Rocker 2 years ago and Rodney Garner. Garner may be even more accomplished and a better recruiter, it looks like. So I think this is a good group, and one where when you add a Tyler Barron and now a Byron Young into that group, and they're going to be basically at those end spots a lot, I think that changes the dynamic and the look of this group. I do think, and I asked Rodney Garner about the playing a lot of different guys. If that starts to get pared down, like in basketball, you start bringing, you're shortening the bench when you get to the postseason. It doesn't sound like he's going in that direction, because there's not a huge separation between guys. And then that gas tank is a big factor. We'll see if they're on the field too much and too frequently. The offense isn't extending drives, and you're back on the field again and again. Will that group sustain better than some other positions? We'll see. But I do think he likes that group. There's not a huge separation. And, you know, I think a lot of guys have earned playing time as well.
Back to the phones we go. It's Tony who joins us next. Hello, Tony.
Good afternoon. Hi, guys.
Hi.
I got a comment and see how y'all feel about it. I have really been impressed for the last 2 years the way Florida's coaches have played Alabama. It seems like they've got a few answers. They may not have the talent Alabama's got, but it seems like they know how to play them. And if I was Alabama, I'd rather play Georgia. I know Georgia's for real, but I'd rather play Georgia in the SEC championship if they both make it than Georgia, because I think Florida thinks they can play with them. See how y'all feel.
Well, I mean, Georgia's taking them to overtime. Met them in the national championship game. So I just think that Georgia's got that same level of confidence. And the thing is, Georgia, Vince, will have the chance to perhaps add a pretty dynamic performer to their offense if indeed that meeting takes place in the SEC title game, when you look at who's not playing right now suiting up on Saturdays for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I think Darnell Washington is who they would add. So
George Pickens.
Yep, yeah, George Pickens. That's right. So, look, they are really talented. The one thing about Florida that maybe stylistically does give Alabama some issues, and it's happened before, is those really mobile quarterbacks. Some would call them dual threat quarterbacks. I don't know who would call those. Call them
what's that? Define that.
That's another subject. We don't have time for that. But yeah, those kind of play, dynamic playmakers, and Florida certainly has that running and passing threat at quarterback. So I think stylistically it does help. Look, Georgia is really good, and Georgia's as good as they have been in any of this run of Georgia-Alabama meetings in the SEC championship game before. Georgia's defense is probably better than any of those other units they've been, or at least as good. Now they have more to offer in terms of balance on offense. I still think Georgia would be tough. I don't know that Alabama's wishing for Georgia in that scenario, but I see what Tony is talking about because of that quarterback run.
I think Alabama's hoping for Kentucky.
That's right. Hey, mathematically, everybody's still on the table, so there's five other options.
All right, guys, thank you.
All right, sure do appreciate it, Tony. Let's go next to Clay. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Clay.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well. Hope you are.
Yeah, doing well. Yeah, I just had a question for Vince and you guys. I know they asked Coach, I think it was yesterday, if Milton was 100%. If he'd be the starter and he elected not to speak on hypotheticals. I feel like you guys might be able to speak on a hypothetical. If he is 100%, Vince, do you think he gets the nod? Obviously, you know, Heupel's not going to share that. But do you think he gets the nod? And if not, do you think – how short do you think Hooker's leash will be? Maybe if he's not starting off too hot, does he get a yanked pretty quick, or does he get the confidence that seemed like Milton had at the beginning of the year? I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Clay. Two good questions. And I'll start out with this in terms of Josh Heupel never dealing in hypotheticals. What do
hypotheticals?
Nice. Nice. I'd just walk away after that one. Who needs my answer now? We should start calling them that to him. But isn't that what football coaches do? You have to prepare yourself for hypothetical situations. That's what you do. You have to be prepared for all of these situations. That's also sports.
Didn't I hear something about if we had hit some of those long balls, the score would have been, well, that's a hypothetical.
That's right. If you're working on goal-to-goal situations, that's a hypothetical. You're not there yet.
Yeah. Everything about what they do is hypothetical. So anyway, if Milton is 100%, will he start? I think the answer to that is depends on how much he practices this week. If he gets a full week of practice, then I think that's where, then it sounds to me like that's the direction that they would go. I would not. I would start Hendon Hooker because I think he has played better and earned it. He also has 6 career starts on the road as a starting quarterback in conference play. So, and his numbers are kind of mixed. I'll get to that in a second. But I think he has more experience in those type of hostile environments. And then also, with Milton, the reason why I say it depends on when is if he's not 100% until like Friday without a full week of practice, not having really practiced last week either, is that really the smart play to start him? My answer to that would be no, when you have an option like a Hendon Hooker. So I think it depends on how much he practices this week on whether they do that.
And I think they'll start Hendon Hooker.
I do too.
I agree with you. I think they should. So what kind of a leash does Hooker get?
I don't think because of his turnovers, I don't think it's an incredibly long leash. I mean, it's hard to put an exact number on it. I guess it depends on how dramatic they are, how the timeliness of them. But those turnovers, Jimmy, they can have a greater value in a coach's mind than some of those overthrows. I know there's a greater volume of the overthrows and the missed deep shots, but I don't think coaches look at those as an equal value. It's not a dollar for dollar value. Missed throws is like a turnover. I don't think they view it that way. So those Hendon Hooker turnovers have to come down or be eliminated, or else even if his stats are better, and if Milton is ready to go to at least play. Remember when Heupel asked that question yesterday, when he did, after the hypothetical answer, he did say, well, we'll see earlier in the week how that goes and make a determination on his availability to play. He didn't say anything about starting. He said play. So if Milton can at least get to 100% and be available to play, I don't think that Hendon Hooker leash is super long. Now, it's not like first interception, he's out. But if it gets to 2 or 3 and the score and they need a spark, would not surprise me if they were to go to Milton after that because those turnovers carry such great weight in the minds of coaches.
Our guest, Vince Ferrara, his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson, and we head to the Stanley Fencing Gates Hotline, Vince. For a longtime friend, and it's great to talk to him this week.
Absolutely. Any excuse we can do so to bring in and talk to our friend Steve Russell, covers the Florida Gators on the Gators Radio Network and also WRUF 850 in Gainesville, does a terrific weekday show in Gainesville. Steve, Vince, John, and Jimmy, you got the full crew ready for you today. How you doing, Steve?
Man. I'm doing great, and thanks for having me, fellas. Good to talk to you.
Always great to talk to you. So, a lot of reaction to Florida's performance against Alabama. How much did that change your view of this Gators team moving forward based on how that Alabama game played out Saturday?
You know, I'll be very honest, not a lot, because I was one of the few. Now, I didn't think Florida would win. But I heard people, 20 points, 25 points, blowout. I thought it would be a one or a two possession game, and that's what it turned out to be. And the reason I thought that is because of Dan Mullen. He is, you know, the more I watch him coach, what he does with offenses, what he does with different personnel, this offense this year, guys, is so different from last year, and yet it's productive, and he's doing it with a quarterback who's just kind of learning the ropes here. So I thought it would be a competitive game, but I got to be honest, when it was 21-3, I kind of thought, oh, boy. But they did a nice job, only gave up 10 points through three quarters. The defense tackled better, and they acquitted themselves well. But to break that barrier, this is a game you have to win. Coming close is great, but to be elite, you got to win it, and the Gators aren't quite there yet.
Joined by Steve Russell from WRUF in Gainesville, previewing the Florida Gators, the opponent for the Tennessee Volunteers this Saturday here on Sports Talk. Vince Ferrara, John Wilkerson, Jimmy Himes. So, Steve, with that Dan Mullen effect on quarterbacks, why do you think Emory Jones was able to play at such a higher level against the highest level of competition versus some of the ups and downs with the four picks in those first two games?
He kind of said this today, and when he said it at first, I didn't really believe it, but the more I kind of have it in my head, he kind of said, I was more relaxed because I knew this was my game. Richardson wasn't going to play. And so in his head, it was his game. He didn't have to come out. He was going to be there, whether they were behind or ahead. And he said it sort of relaxed him. And I think it did, in fact, do that. Now, he's going to have to get used to it again when Richardson can play, because Richardson is going to play somewhat for Dan Mullen. But I do think in his head, when he thought this is my game, he was much more relaxed and he showed it.
Steve, when you look at the Florida defense, this might be a hard question to answer. Obviously, it's a better defense than a year ago. How much better is it than last year?
To be determined. And look, let's face it, it couldn't have gotten worse. The defense last year was historically bad here. I do think they're a lot better, though, guys, up front. I think last year on both lines of scrimmage, they got pushed around by some teams. And Alabama, after the first quarter, did not do that. And arguably, Florida won the line of scrimmage the last three quarters. You know, getting Newkirk, getting Valentino to play defensive tackle, bulks that position up. Even though they didn't have Ventrell Miller, Zachary Carter coming back has really helped. Cox off the edge. I still am not convinced about the other corner besides Elam. And their safety play sometimes is suspect. They don't tackle well at times. But I do think the defense is better. A work in progress, but better.
With Florida's defense, the secondary, they have really done a nice job for the most part over the last 15 or so years of press coverage against Tennessee's receivers. And the Vols have not done very good against that press coverage. How good is Florida at press coverage this year?
Mixed. And that's been one of the things that fans have talked about. You know, when Florida had its first two games, Grantham played rather soft coverage, and that's not normally something he does. He plays press coverage a lot. They played a little more press coverage the other day. I mean, Elam can do that with anybody. He's good. He should be a first-round draft choice. It's the other corner where you have two young guys in Helm and Marshall I think they have to cover up for a little bit. So I think you'll see a mixture of that. But I do believe this. Until Tennessee proves it can play off of press coverage, if I'm Grantham, I'm with you guys. I'm playing that until Tennessee shows me they can beat it.
Steve, in these parts, so many times because of the struggles that this program has gone through, it's been the backup quarterback that has had, or even the third string quarterback at times, that has had all of the hype behind him and or the fans, hey, would love to see this guy get a shot. As good as Kyle Trask was last year, did Emory Jones have anybody in his corner in that regard? And then I'm thinking with Anthony Richardson playing the way that he did early on before he got banged up, that my guess is that there were quite a few in Richardson's corner as opposed to Jones.
Oh, my gosh. If you, after those first couple of games, if you would have taken a poll, it would have been about 90% that wanted Richardson to come in and play all the way. Look, there's no doubt this guy is electric. I mean, he can... The other day when he was medically cleared to play and didn't, he had a backflip on the field. Yeah. I mean, that's how athletic this guy is, but he's really raw. He's a local kid. He played at Eastside here. You know, when he played against teams where he was the best athlete, he was really, really good. And then when he played against teams that had, you know, talent that was, you know, about the same, he struggled at times. But there's no doubting his physical ability. But he's raw. He doesn't read defense as well, yet he doesn't do the little things that a Kyle Trask could do because he had experience. But once, hopefully, he gets to do that, and if he does with his physical ability, he can be really, really good.
Dan Mullen, of course, publicly has said that his confidence 100% with Jones all along, even before he was his starting quarterback. And I'm wondering, what do you think it means to the fan base to have seen Jones lead the offense the way he did in that second half as Florida almost came up with the huge win?
There was a point in the game where Gator fans actually booed Emory Jones. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I'm old school. You don't boo college athletes. I don't care if you're winning by 50 or losing by 50. You just don't do that. And I thought it was a really bad thing for Gator fans to do. But that didn't deter Mullen. You know, he was accused of being too loyal to Felipe Franks when Trask was sitting behind him. And if you remember, Franks got hurt and Trask was going to play against Missouri. And then Trask got hurt and Franks came back. So he's always been loyal to his starting quarterback. And I think this vindicated Mullen a little bit to have faith in Jones, to have he's not going to be Kyle Trask. He's not. Mm-hmm. And Gator fans should understand that. He's not as good a thrower, but he's the kind of quarterback Mullen loves. Can beat you with his legs, can beat you with his feet, throws enough to beat you. And I think this, I hope for Gator fans, this game for Jones is a big confidence booster.
Steve Russell from WRUF in Gainesville, also the Gators Radio Network, joining us here as we preview Tennessee and Florida. Steve, how much do you believe in the post-Alabama impact after playing the Crimson Tide and impacting teams the week after?
We're going to see. And that was a topic of conversation. It's funny you asked that, Vince, because immediately after the game, in the locker room, the players, a lot of them, Jones and several others, said, you know, we have to forget this. We want to see this team again. And in order to see this team again in Atlanta, we have to win SEC games. Well, Tennessee's an SEC game. Now, do I think it'll be as electric as it was as a crowd? No. It'll be as many people? No. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a bit of a letdown. That just kind of is something you think would happen. But how mature is this team? Dan Mullen's been preaching to them all week. You have to come out and play the same way. That's easier said than done. But I just think this group really wants to get back at Alabama again. And we'll see how sharp they are. If they struggled early, Vince, it wouldn't surprise me, but I think they'll be fine.
Steve, a lot of people are talking about, obviously, the quarterbacks running the football, the stable of running backs. But what about this offensive line? What stands out to you about that group?
Well, I kind of mentioned it earlier at the tackle position. That's where I thought they really needed to bulk up and get some girth in there. And because of Valentino and because of Newkirk, I think it's made the whole defensive line better. And one of the things that Grantham did last year, maybe to his detriment, is play a lot of people. Now, is that to keep people fresh? Is that to keep people out of the transfer portal nowadays? A guy like Irvon Dexter, who was a five-star guy who last year, frankly, didn't play like it. And arguably, Dexter had his best game. I've seen him play against Alabama last week. And like I said, getting Carter back certainly helped. They're pretty deep along the defensive front now. Cox was hurt. I think he's just starting to come back to where his pre-injury form was. So I think Florida is much better and much deeper on the defensive front.
Last couple of minutes with you, Steve. What about the offensive line for the Gators?
Biggest surprise of the season in a positive way. This group last year, much like the defensive front, got pushed around. And it wasn't very stout. But against Alabama, they won the line of scrimmage the last three quarters. They really did an excellent job. They're not deep. That's the trouble. They only played seven offensive linemen the other day, and they don't have a whole lot of confidence in, you know, after about past eight. So they got to stay healthy there. But I think John Hevesy has done a really good job with this group. They've got a nice mixture. You know, Reese has been there. He's a sixth-year player. Igokwin, the center now, is coming to his own. So I think that line has gotten a lot better. And obviously you can tell because the run game is incredible. I mean, the stable of backs they have, they've opened tremendous holes for them. And for the most part,
they've given the quarterbacks time to throw. So I think that's the most improved position on the team.
Steve, who's Florida's best running back? Who's Florida's best wide receiver?
Wow. Depending on the day at running back, because literally, you know, they've got, I mean, whatever stars are worth, they have 2 5-star guys as running backs who didn't see the field the other day. And that's amazing. So when you get Malik Davis and you get Pierce and you get Naquan Wright, depends on the day. Either one of them can have a great day. Now, the other day, Naquan Wright had a series when he was just explosive and did really well. But there, that's the deepest position on the team. And then at wide receiver, I don't know that they have a go-to guy. They threw one pass to the tight ends the first two games. They caught a bunch of balls, which they took out of mothballs for Alabama. But I don't know that there's a wide receiver there that just says, I'm the guy you throw the ball to. They kind of spread it around. They don't have an NFL guy at wide receiver yet, I don't think. It may develop. Whittemore made a couple of nice plays over the middle the other day. I thought Shorter would have more balls thrown to him than he has. He just hasn't gotten open a whole lot. It's a good group, but not an elite group.
Steve, I'd like to get your impressions of Tennessee. And could you ever have imagined Tennessee being as different as it is personnel-wise from last year to this year after the staff change and, of course, the rotating the revolving door that was the transfer portal?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head by the two things you said. Different coach, different offensive philosophy, and transfer portal. I like what Heupel does. I like what Heupel did at UCF. I think it's going to, in the end, it may take a while, but that's going to help Tennessee. Now, you have to recruit those kinds of athletes, either as freshmen or in the transfer portal, but that offense, when it's run right, gives people trouble. And I think that's perfect what Tennessee needs to do. Now, is it going to work immediately? Is it going to work against, you know, really elite teams? I'm not sure he has the horses yet, but I think Gator fans should be aware here. Depending on, you know, I'm not sold on Milton, guys. Just from what I've seen of him, and I know Hooker played against the Tennessee Tech team, he's not very good, but I don't know what Milton will really bring to the table. But if he gets a quarterback that can run that system like he had at UCF and gets the right guys, I think Tennessee fans will love that offense, and they'll score. I think they're going to score some points against Florida.
Steve, really appreciate it. Always great to get your insights. Fun to talk to you, as always. Thank you so much for the time. Enjoy the game on Saturday.
Thanks for having me, guys. If it turns, I want to talk to you this week. Thank you, buddy.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Russell, WRUF, and the Gators Radio Network.
Joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. And Vince, we can go really fast on these, but VFLs in the NFL, how about the big moment for Juwan Jennings?
Yeah, really cool. Very first NFL catch, a touchdown.
That's right.
Had three wides at the top in the red zone for the 49ers against the Eagles. He was the inside guy in the slant, and then they just kind of had a crossing route, sort of a rub route, and he was the one that was left open, rightfully so, least known commodity, and then throws a little bit behind him, made the adjustment, went in the end zone, and he got to not only dance, but the first guy there to celebrate with him, I believe, was George Kittle. So how cool is that to have an elite player there celebrating with you, both of you together? Pretty awesome.
Yeah, Juwan looked like he was ready for his celebration and looked like he had been there before.
That's right.
And then so you've got all the action that you update 1 week to the next with VFLs and the NFL. You do all your NFL picks that folks can find with Vince's views on the website, 991thesportsanimal.com. And you've got a really nice matchup, one that's got a lot of history behind it when Halls plays at Powell on Friday.
Yeah, for sure. Two great coaches, the history, the programs. Two excellent 5A teams. Scott Cummings did a great job there at Halls, and obviously we know all about how Powell is really good. Walter Nolan, get a second look at him, and we're really impressed with him in week one. So there's so many things that are awesome. That venue, just so many great things about our matchup, Halls at Powell, on our KOC Game of the Week this Friday.
And had to get a quick react to what did you think as to how the return home went for Bianca Belair after somebody kind of rained on her parade.
Yeah, the man, Becky Lynch, came in, and with Glenn Jacobs, who was in there in the ring with Bianca Belair and there with that celebration. And, yeah, the man kind of ruined the party, and left her lane for a minute, but then Bianca got back on her feet. And I, what they do in those shows a lot of times is they will talk to the crowd only. So I'm sure she had a nice extended celebration. They call that dark with the fans that were there at Thompson Bowling Arena. So calling high school football, unfortunately, I couldn't be there, but certainly enjoyed watching it. She got a lot of FaceTime. They don't do those homecomings for just anybody. She warranted, deserved it as such a superstar with the WWE. It was really cool to see.
That was really cool. And of course, folks will find what they find on 991thesportsanimal.com. Really cool.
Yeah, all of our interviews, players, coaches, UT continues to give us a bunch of those. All of them on the podcast, is on the menu. You can go to audio and then look for Vols interviews and more. That's where all our press conferences are. And then the video section, we'll have all the videos up shortly from today and as they continue to come.
Vince, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great week. A great call on Friday. We'll look forward to it.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
That's Vince Ferrara joining us for hour number two of the show. His appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment.